Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another edition of the Detroit Football Network podcast, midweek edition. I'm back. J-Mo's back. Will Birchfield is back. And ready to do some chatting about the best team in football. Or so the kids say. I don't know. I mean, the Chiefs are still undefeated. But look, we talked after the game immediately, Will. You know, it was a big test to go into Lambeau. Lions passed, Packers failed in their inclement conditions out there. And it's pretty hard to argue right now that there's a better team in the NFC and maybe not in football.
No, I was about to say the ultimate testament to how well the Lions have played through eight games is that they are ranked above the two-time defending Super Bowl champion and the undefeated Chiefs in most people's power rankings or rankings of teams who are most likely to win this year's Super Bowl. They have somehow supplanted the Chiefs in America's consciousness as the best team in the NFL. And as you said, it is hard to dispute because, as we said last week, they're making extremely impressive wins look extremely routine. And they have a chance again this Sunday to make another statement against a team that looks like a real threat in the AFC, despite some serious attrition to that roster over the course of this season.
Yeah, I think the thing that separates them from the Chiefs and that, you know, undefeated is undefeated. I don't want to take anything away from that, but it's just the way the Lions are getting it done. I mean, they're really, you know, pounding a lot of teams into submission. Then you watch the Chiefs and eight wins. I think their margin of victory average is somewhere right around seven. And, you know, I got a good chance to check out the primetime matchup this week, and they struggled against a Bucs team that was lacking any credible receiving threat. And, yeah, you know, maybe this goes back to what we talked about with the Lions after the Green Bay win. Like, it's just business as usual for the Chiefs, and they know how to get it done, and they don't need to be fancy. They know who they are. They've won championships, and that's good enough. Just get it done and get out. Obviously, the DeAndre Hopkins addition seems like a really good pickup for them, really solves maybe a hole in their roster, but they weren't the only ones that solved a hole in their roster this week, Will.
No, not even close. So that the Lions executed the long-rumored trade for Za'Darius Smith, and it feels like it definitely addresses, we shouldn't use the word fills, but addresses their biggest need. And Za'Darius Smith was the most realistic target, probably the most gettable target, and it felt like the best player for this team to target to insert into its defensive scheme. And now they have a proven pass rusher on the edge and someone that can provide both some of that pocket crushing ability that they've been missing and also someone who can help them set an edge against the run. They're going to rely on Za'Darius Smith to do both of those things. And you hope that with his introduction and Josh Pascal's return, who should be back in the lineup this week, the Lions can contain the run game on the edge more and obviously get home to the quarterback. And if they can do that, then it's hard to envision them, A, not locking up the number one seed in the NFC, and then by extension, not reaching the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I dug into Za'Darius Smith's film a little bit in the week lead up. You know, I touched on 12 guys and the logical fits, right? And he was always the one that stood out like a sore thumb in terms of just checking all the boxes: size, rush style,
yep,
salary, cost. You know, potentially next year if you want to exercise that, what essentially boils down to a team option. It all made sense. But I, you know, went deeper into the film once the deal got done. You was able to put more time into it, and it was just a confirmation of everything I thought from the glimpse that I took earlier. You know, this is a guy that rushes with tremendous power, gets a lot of pushback regularly, can bend edge. It's not, you know, he's not Gumby. not many guys are at 275 pounds. But, you know, he's going to fill that need really, really well. And maybe that only means 4 or 5 sacks down the stretch. But we know already he has 27 pressures. The last 2 years, it was 60 pressures, 80 pressures. Yeah, he was rushing opposite of superstars, didn't see probably the best blocker. He'll probably see more chips and nudges and such. But he's automatically the best active pass rusher on the Lions roster, and, you know, not a bad run defender either. So really, really good pickup for Brad Holmes. The cost was probably even a little less than I think some of us imagined. I thought I was going to take the fourth rounder, took a fifth, and a swap of a sixth and seventh, which is downright inconsequential, really, in a year down the line. I guess my question to you is, do you think Smith alone was enough? Because obviously Lions fans were pining for more, which, I mean, that's what fans do, more.
Yeah, well, it sounds like they targeted Smith from almost the minute that Hutchinson went down. I mean, from what we can gather, Brad Holmes reached out right away to Cleveland, and they were working on this deal for Za'Darius Smith for most of the last 3 weeks. I mean, it seems like every single midweek episode we've had now for most of the past month, we've discussed possible trade targets, how to replace Hutchinson, and Za'Darius Smith has always come up. And upstairs the whole time, Brad Holmes has been on the phone with Cleveland trying to get it done, and eventually they do. So it's a good job by him. And to answer your question, it is enough if the Lions continue to get out of Aleem McNeil what they have for most of the past month. I think since the Seahawks game, which was week 4, he has been one of the best interior defenders in the NFL, and it's really helped them generate some push up front, especially against the pass, that they were lacking on the outside. And in fact, McNeil, you could argue, is still the team's best pass rusher, even with Smith's addition. Obviously not in the traditional sense, but he has been, since week 4, as effective as any defensive tackle in the NFL, Chris Jones included, at getting to the quarterback. He's tied with Chris Jones since week 4 in QB pressures, tied for first among defensive tackles, and he's 8th in the NFL over that stretch. He has 24. Za'Darius Smith has 23 since week 4, which is also a really impressive output. And I think that McNeil playing next to Reader on the inside, with Reader now demanding more double teams as he finds his footing, and playing alongside Onyeka, has really allowed him to flourish with some one-on-one matchups. And Aleem is such a heady player. Like, he spends a lot of time watching the greats at his position, especially when it comes to pass rushing. We knew when he got here, this goes all the way back to his rookie season in 2021, that he'd be able to help this team defend the run. But he has made a concerted effort, especially since dropping so much weight, to become a better pass rusher. And he is, you know, he told me he spent a lot of time watching guys like Fletcher Cox, and even Jeffrey Simmons, who we saw, Christian Wilkins, he referenced, you know, like the best interior pass rushers in the NFL. And he's becoming a guy like that. Now, if you add Smith and Pascal on the outside and Levi Reeder and Aleem in the middle, all of a sudden, despite the loss of Hutchinson, Davenport, and I'll throw Derek Barnes in there too, you feel pretty good about this defensive line going forward, especially considering what they have on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, you talk about, you know, marriage of rushing coverage and being so important to the success of pass defense. But, you know, what you're hitting on here is, you know, important with the game within that game, right? Like, you need the marriage of interior and edge pass rush, and they just haven't got anywhere close to enough since Hutchinson went out. And Pascal showed some flashes, but it's got to come from more than one side, right? Yep. And so, you know, one of the sacks that I watched from Za'Darius Smith was a perfect example. It wasn't even his sack. He was able to quickly bend the edge, take away the escape lane, and the quarterback had to step up, and he stepped right into the defensive tackle. Yeah. I think it was Dalvin over there. But, you know, that's what Levi's doing. He had multiple pressures against Green Bay. Yeah. I thought he looked like the best defensive player on the field, particularly after Branch got ejected early in that one. And, you know, it's going to be a really big help in the same way that Aleem and Reader were help to maximizing what Hutchinson do. That's just going to be a really nice symbiotic relationship that's going to elevate the defensive line.
Yeah, and I also think it's worth pointing out that the secondary is playing better and better. And a lot of attention, rightfully so, is going towards Branch and Joseph, who have established themselves, in my mind, as the best safety duo in the NFL. But Terrion Carlton and Amik as a trio are playing better and better. And I was looking this up last week. The most man cover snaps in the NFL, Terrion Arnold. The second most man cover snaps in the NFL with exactly four less, Carlton Davis. And the eighth most, Amik Robertson. And in those man coverage snaps, they have allowed just 38 completions on 72 passes. And I mean, that's really solid production. And they would immediately point out that they don't have any picks yet, and they want to change that badly. And when they do, or whoever does, the two others will have to bang out 100 pushups on command on the sideline. But in a defense under Aaron Glenn that wants to play aggressively and up under your chin, those three guys are really holding up in man coverage. And I want to just see how that compares to other teams who play a lot of man coverage. And New England jumps out, Denver jumps out, Jacksonville jumps out. And when you look at their starting corners, their trio of defenders who have played the most snaps in man coverage, their combined completion percentage against is 68% for Denver, it's 70% for Jacksonville, 60% for New England. Again, for Terrion Carlton and Amik, it's 52%. So I think that's really helped this defense against the pass. And Branch and Joseph, obviously their production speaks for itself.
Yeah, and we talked to Amik today, and we'll get to that later. But you know, he made a really strong point, and one that I agree with, consuming their film, that they're not playing their best football. And I think Carlton's been playing excellently lately. Like, he's really settled into a groove here. Feels like he is the best player in among the cornerbacks. Certainly the most consistent player. Had a really nice game in Green Bay. Arnold, as you would expect, little up and down. Probably a little bit more down lately, but you know, you have some opponents that turn it over or drop the ball, and that doesn't become as big of an issue. He's growing. He's going to be fine. What's really interesting to me is the reinforcements that are coming for that secondary. And I don't know where they fit, but we learned today that Emmanuel Mosley and Ifeatu Melifonwu are coming back, starting their 3-week acclimation window. And so I think what people don't realize is that Mosley was kind of penciled in for that nickel job to start the year. That was day one, first team training camp reps went to Mosley, and it was always going to be a competition. Robertson was in the mix. Rakestraw was in the mix. There was a point this season where the Lions were really close to putting Rakestraw in the starting lineup, and he got hurt and, you know, allowed Amik to kind of lock down that job. But I'm very curious to see how, if at all, Mosley is able to kind of work his way into their rotation, and even more so Melifonwu, because they had three safety rotation last year. It's easy to pull Tracy Walker off, but how do you pull Brian Branch? How do you pull Kirby Joseph off the field? Those are two guys playing at an unbelievable level. And we know Melifonwu was a really great blitzer, but I mean, where does he fit? Is it nickel reps? Are they going to expand to some dime looks where he's kind of a hybrid linebacker? I just don't know. And so, you know, those guys, they've got 3 weeks to kind of figure it out on the practice field, 3.5 weeks. And I guess they'll worry about it then. But that secondary is suddenly going to look really, really deep on top of, you know, the effectiveness they've been playing with.
Yeah. So if he's got 3 weeks to put on about 100 pounds and move to defensive end, and then they can weaponize him all they want off the edge, because I agree, you're not taking what you could argue are your two best players on defense off the field. I mean, Branch and Joseph are a turnover waiting to happen every time they're out there, every time the quarterback drops back. You can't afford to move them to the sideline for almost any single snap of any game. But as you were talking through how iffy fits in, I had that same image of playing him in the box somehow and trying to disguise when he is and isn't going to blitz. I remember talking to him about this during their playoff run last year because he had really been unleashed as that like pass rushing safety beginning in the Broncos game, I think, that Saturday night football game in Detroit. And from that point on, was just causing chaos in the backfield every time he came through. And he said like AG had really helped him learn to camouflage when he was going to blitz. And that was part of why he was so good. Teams just didn't see it coming. You know, he said he had to fight the urge. He would get the call and he would remind himself over and over again, act cool, act cool, act cool. Don't give it away. And he was good at that. And then he had two things that really helped him close those plays, not just get pressures, but get sacks. Closing speed, like a you know, really impressive closing speed and length. I mean, they've always love that about Melifonwu. He has such length, and it allows him, you know, to turn that sack or that near sack into a sack. And so I think if and when he's back out there, you know, that feels like it has to be the role.
Yeah, people don't realize, but he never blitzed before. I mean, it wasn't something he did in college because he was playing corner.
One time he blitzed in college.
Yeah. And so he had a lot to learn. And by the end of the season, I mean, he was literally performing at the highest level of any defensive back in the league in terms of pass rush efficiency. So it, you know, really a hat tip to one, his work he put into it and the coaching staff and getting him ready. In terms of reinforcements that'll be contributing this week, Josh Pascal, we've talked about him a bit, he's back. He kind of offered some clarity on what cost him the last two games. Cancer screening, mass was found on his shoulder, had to be removed and tested. That is clear. Obviously, that is the great news. If you don't remember, malignant melanoma, I think.
Melanoma.
Yeah. Thank you. 2018, had to be treated for that. So still getting annual screenings. This came up, was certainly the priority to get that addressed immediately. And then J-Mo.
Just point out that the mass was not cancerous.
Correct.
That they found in his shoulder. It was something that had to get removed. They did, but it wasn't malignant. It wasn't cancerous. It was just something that popped up on the screening and it's taken care of and he's ready to return to the field.
You know what it made me think of after we learned, obviously it was non-cancerous and you can let your mind wander a little bit. It reminded me of when John Penasini
had the chicken hearts.
Campbell described it as like, whatever. You said chicken hearts, chicken nuggets is how I remember it, just massive. Things of fat.
Yeah, he described them as chicken hearts, and I know that because on our Fox 2 training camp special that year, I asked Campbell if he had ever eaten chicken hearts, and he said yes.
Yeah,
he said he ate basically every part of a chicken besides the part you'd want to have least. Blast from the past, John Penasini. Hope he's well.
Also back, J-Mo. You know, two-game suspension. You know, I was looking at the numbers last week, and they're deceptive, but I mean, the Lions didn't have any explosive plays against the Titans or Green Bay outside of obviously Jahmyr Gibbs, 70-yard run. But in terms of the passing game, a lot of shorter passes with J-Mo out, but you know, what do we read into that? They got the ball at the 26-yard line or closer a dozen times against Tennessee. The conditions were awful, wind, rain. Really, Goff, I think, attempted two passes, 7 yards or more beyond the line of scrimmage. So I don't know how much they missed J-Mo during those games, but I think it's still going to be really welcome to get him back in the offense just because of the way that his presence stresses defense in concert with the run game and that they have there.
Here. Doesn't this feel like the perfect game for him to return to as well? I mean, you're indoors in Houston on that fast track under the Sunday night lights. It feels like a game with the Lions will air it out a few times, and J-Mo is someone who thrives on the stage. He doesn't feel pressure. He loves when the eyes are on him. And I think when the schedule was released, you know, you go through and you look at each game, and certain players like come to mind when you look at each matchup. And for me, for whatever reason, J-Mo just always jumped into my consciousness anytime I kind of envisioned this Sunday night at the Texans game, and the Texans have, you know, all of their star receivers. Obviously some are banged up right now, so we'll see how it shapes out on Sunday night. But And you think about a game that might be high scoring, and you just, I just kept thinking about J-Mo getting free over the top a couple times and hauling in some bombs from Jared Goff. And I don't feel any differently about it now. We did speak to J-Mo today, and you know, he was asked a little bit about what he felt like he learned during his time away. And he said, you know, I need to be smarter. And I think what he means by that is put himself in better situations. I thought Dan Campbell probably had the most revealing or sincere comment about J-Mo today. And what he said was that, you know, when you miss time, it always hurts because it hurts not to play. And when you don't have anybody to blame but yourself, it makes you look at yourself a little bit harder. And so you hope that in his time away, J-Mo did a little bit of self-evaluation. And as he gets back on the field, the Lions expect that he won't miss a beat.
Yeah, I mean, being smarter is nothing different than what we said, right? It's attention to details. It's just making better life decisions, because that's led to the three incidents, whatever you want to call them, that he's had. And so, you know, it's good that he recognizes it. Words are one thing, actions are another. Yep. I think we have seen at some level, despite these two coming down the pipe most recently, like he has made major strides from when he got here to now. Now it's time to just take the next step. And everybody in the organization seems confident that he will. So I guess we kind of allow it to play out and, you know, look back at it in hindsight. All right. So as I said, we talked to Amik Robertson in the locker room today.
We also talked to Carlton Davis by extension.
Well, Carlton Davis talked to us. He crashed the interview. It just shows some of the chemistry going on in that DB room. But we'll hear that interview, a little truncated because of a meeting, but we'll hear that interview coming back after the break.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here's that locker room interview with Amik Robertson joining Will and I. All right, we're joined this week by Amik Robertson. Still looking for that first interception, I hear.
Oh, yeah. I ain't gonna lie. Coming into Green Bay, man, if I'm being honest, I saw the weather. I'm like, you know, when I went out there for warm-ups, it was cool. I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I got an opportunity to catch me a pick, you know what I'm saying, whatever. But when I saw the weather, man, I said, you know, I just play for the PBUs. If I catch a pick, it got to be, like, right in my hand. But the weather was so bad, gloves, slippery. So, yeah, but unfortunately, we didn't come out. Kirby, of course.
Yeah. Stole another one.
Every week, man. But, you know, them corners, you know, we still hunting for, you know, for our first pick.
So you told me that when you envisioned it, it was going to be a jump ball. Is that still how you see it unfolding?
Yes,
and how
yes.
about doing it on Sunday night football in the brightest lights?
Yes. I definitely see it now I see it this weekend against the Texans. They're going to try a jump ball with whoever. Yeah. It's okay. You know, I'm going to be able to show everybody my jumping ability.
What has the chemistry been like with these guys? So many new guys here. How long did it take you guys to kind of become, you know, connected?
The crazy thing about it is we learned each other during the offseason, right?
Yeah.
You know, we wanted to get that, nip that in the bud early. But the crazy thing about it, man, even though we were playing good football, we're still not where we want to be at.
Yeah.
Like, we still feel like we got room for improvement, man. We just trying to get better each and every week. That's what it's all about. As long as we getting better each and every week, communication, knowing where, you know, knowing where I help at, knowing where this guy's gonna be. As long as we keep doing that, man, we'll be just fine.
How about the off field chemistry though? What do you guys like to do as a group?
Oh yeah, we watch Thursday night football together. Okay. You know, we go to Curb House, he get his chef to cook. You know, they just went to the Pistons and Lakers game. Of course, I overslept. You know, so I didn't show up, man. You know, broke my heart. But yeah, we most definitely do a lot of stuff other than in the building. We do that every Thursday though.
Yeah.
We go to Curb House every Thursday and eat and watch the game. Kind of vibe with each other.
Hey, you said last week going into that Packers game that you guys got more dogs in your locker room. You stood on it. You proved it.
Yes.
How'd you know that?
Hey. I mean, it just got to be in you, man. When you're watching film, you look at how they play, you look at how we play. That goes for a lot of teams, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of teams that we got more dogs. You know, we just going to continue to go out there and show it.
You mentioned the Lakers-Pistons game. Jared Goff has referred to himself as the point guard of this offense.
Yes.
If he was an NBA point guard, who do you think he would be?
I think he would be Chris Paul. No. Not even Chris. I thought the facilitator. Okay. If I'm saying point, I'd give him that's hard,
Jason
bro.
Kidd. I'm going to throw Jason Kidd.
I'm going to go.
I like Steve Nash.
Oh, I thought you were saying now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, how about a current day point guard?
Current day. That's what I'm saying.
Carlton Davis has joined our interview here.
I'm gonna go current, bro. You gotta go
current. Oh man, I ain't gonna lie. I'm not even too up on these current guys.
That's what I'm saying. Cause they more Curry.
They more Curry shooting the ball.
You know what I'm saying? So
what about like Luka? I was thinking Luka, like he kind of plays with a little bit of rhythm.
Luka's not a point guard.
He's shooting guard, I guess. Yeah, point guard, shooting guard.
Yeah, he's not a.
Yeah, that's good point.
4 minutes though.
Yeah, he's not really. I'm not covering. All right. So I'm saying that's a hard one, man. I have to come back to that one.
Who would you be if you played in the NBA? Cause I know you must have a guy. Who do you think of yourself as?
Uncle Drew. I'm explosive, but I can't really dunk. How they dunk?
Yeah.
I'm gonna go Uncle Drew, man. I'm gonna go Kyrie Irving.
Can't dunk like they dunk. Can you dunk? Period.
Yes, I've been dunking. See, man, that's what I'm saying. It's a lot of. I'm full of surprises, man. I've been dunking. Believe it or not, I swear, I've been dunking since I was in the 8th grade.
If you were,
and I got a video of me dunking when I was a sophomore. When I was a sophomore, I got a steal now, and nobody knew I could dunk. I said, you know what? Next time I get a fastball, I'm gonna show everybody I could dunk. In the game.
So when you get a pick six, you got to dunk on the uprights, like Demo did, right? That's your next celebration.
Apparently, Dan is not really a fan of that, so I might have to take that one out.
Yeah, he doesn't like finals. You got one in this last game. Took a little bit of talking too after that one.
Yeah, you know, but. I talked to him, man. He's okay with it. He just said next time be a little smarter. You know, he don't want me to lose my swag and my stinger. That's I bring that to the table. I'm a confident guy. You know, aggressive. You know, so he don't want me to lose that.
And to clarify, you were talking to Lions fans, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't even talk to him. But I just didn't feel like really I wouldn't even talk to him.
Hey, if you weren't a professional football player, what would you be doing right now with your life?
Probably coaching or boxing.
Okay, boxing. Yeah. You do everything. You're a Renaissance.
I like boxing. Yeah.
What is take seriously? Like, what is your boxing experience? Or do you just love it?
I'm not really. Yeah, I just like it. You know, I was training in Vegas boxing with a guy named Taylor. His dad was a trainer for Tyson Fury, and I was training with him and obviously just working on my hands, and I kind of, you know, just started, you know, kind of started liking it. And you know, when I was younger too, I was a fighter too when I was younger, so
that is the least surprising thing that we've learned about you from this.
Who did you fight most when you were little? Like, you got brothers,
cousin. Yeah, Monte probably. Yeah. My cousin. Yeah.
Who's the craziest guy in your room?
T.A.
Do you think T.A. would see you?
Or Kurt. T.A.
Crazy in what way? Just always talking?
Yeah, like they outgoing, man. They just don't care what they, you know.
Hey, it seems like you love playing for this team. I can tell these fans love you. Have you felt that embrace yet from the city and this fan base? What's that like feeling now?
Yes, I mean, it's always a good feeling, man, when you're on a good side of the organization and the players and the coaches. You know, they just tell me go out there, be myself, man. And that's how I build my, you know, that's how I'm confident. That's why, I play the way I've been playing, you know, because I got people that's behind me and that's backing me up.
Remind me, did you taste playoffs in Vegas?
No.
So, I mean, You got a long way to go.
Yeah.
But you're tracking that way. I mean, what does it feel like to be on a winning team for the
first
time?
Always good, man, because the energy's high. You know, everybody's, you know, enjoying themselves because we're winning. But we're not what we want to be. We want to keep on improving.
Yeah. Hey, this guy's got a meeting. We don't want to get him fined. Amik, thank you so much, man.
Appreciate y'all.
That was Amik Robertson. Some pretty good stuff there, Will. We didn't have a lot of time, but we tend to make the most of it.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, Amik is a ball of energy, except apparently when he has to wake up in time to go to the Pistons-Lakers game, in which case he sleeps right through his alarm. Hate to see that for Amik.
When's the last time you slept through an alarm?
Well, that alarm would have been going off at what, like 5:45 p.m., 6 p.m.?
It's a different lifestyle.
No doubt.
Just so we're clear, and hopefully I'm not spoiling a story here, but Jared Goff compared himself to Steph Curry.
He did, yeah.
I don't know if I love the comp,
wasn't,
but...
That wasn't the point guard that came to mind for me. I for whatever reason, I was thinking Jalen Brunson because he's not a player that will necessarily wow you with his speed or explosiveness, but he has just this professional rhythm to his game, and I feel like it's a fair comparison, sort of a parallel for the way that Goff plays quarterback. I don't know, who would you compare Goff to as a current or former NBA point? I thought Jason Kidd, by the way, was a pretty good pull by CD.
Triple double machine there. I feel more dual threat action for a Jason Kidd comp. I don't know if we're gonna go old, maybe somebody like Mark Price.
Oh, nice.
I do kind of like the Steve Nash comparison, just because if I remember correctly, like Steve Nash's true shooting percentage with the free throw accuracy and all that just was through the roof. And I think that's a good comp to just the efficiency that Goff is playing right now. Just more about the assist than anything at all.
Yeah.
So I like that as well. All right, we're going to take another quick break here, and then we will come back and discuss this upcoming matchup, one that I probably circled before the season started as the one that interested me the most. Primetime, Houston Texans. All right, we're back. I'm Justin Rogers. This is Will Birchfield, Detroit Football Network podcast. And Will, it feels like we've been saying it every week outside of that Titans game because that one wasn't that interesting. But third really big matchup for the Lions in the last 4 weeks, and they passed the first two tests, both on the road against Minnesota and Green Bay. It is back on the road where Dan Campbell loves his team to be against a Houston Texans team that is, as you pointed out, very, very good at their place.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, they're 4-0 at home, and the Lions are 4-0 on the road. And I think a key for me here is the Lions just quieting that crowd early with their offense. And it's really how they've gone about winning on the road this season, aside from that Vikings game when they obviously fell behind. Go back to the Cardinals game. First possession, touchdown, led by 10 at the half. Go back to the Dallas game. First possession, touchdown, led by 21 at the half. Green Bay, first possession, touchdown, led by 17 at the half. And in all of those games, really coasted from there on out. But it felt like not only did they score on their opening drives, but they imposed their will a little bit. They like to ride Montgomery on those opening drives. And certainly last week, they just sent an early message to Green Bay that this was going to be a fist fight, and they've got knuckles. And they rode him that first drive into the end zone, and really from that point on controlled the physicality of the game. And I think that's how they have to approach Sunday night in Houston.
Yeah, and they're probably very well going to try that, right? Because Houston doesn't have a particularly great run defense. They absolutely overhauled their interior, their defensive line this year. They've got a new edge. They've got new linebackers, at least in more prominent roles after letting Blake Cashman walk in free agency. And so I don't feel like that front seven has gelled all the way yet. They've obviously got some good scoring numbers against, but their run defense hasn't been great. I wanted to check because I didn't know the 4-0 at home stat before we started this. So I was curious who they played. Context obviously matters. Beat the Bears by one score in week 2, not particularly impressive. Beat the Jaguars by one score in week 4, not particularly impressive. beat the Colts by 3 points a couple weeks ago, not particularly impressive. Well, then they beat the Bills, and that's a that's a really damn fine win. I mean, that's a good football team. I know the Bills got off to a little bit of a sluggish start, but the crazy, crazy stat from that game, Josh Allen, 9-for-30.
Wow. And so he has as many incompletions as Goff has in the last 2 years.
I was going to go
something like that.
You just zoomed past me. So look, that's a really interesting figure given what we know about Jared Goff. I mean, he is just on the heater of heaters in terms of efficiency, and he's you know, just doing it, I guess, the right way. You know, people can hate the check down, but he's proving that, like, it is a very effective way to win football games when you have weapons that can maximize that when you get them in space, when the ball is accurate, when you're leading them. And so, I want to see how that secondary holds up. Offensively, the Texans, you know, I thought they'd be better. And part of that, Campbell kind of hit at today. They've had kind of a revolving door of some injuries. Mixon has been a great pickup for them. He is their David Montgomery. I mean, if you want to, these are two teams that I think very much mirror each other, parallel each other, and how they've rebuilt kind of the vibes, the culture their head coaches have instilled. Well, they went out and got their veteran running back this offseason. And just like David Montgomery had the best year of his career in his first year in Detroit, Joe Mixon's having the best year of his career in Houston. They went and they got Diggs, I think another really smart trade. Well, Diggs is out. You know, Mixon's missed a couple games. He's back now. Nico Collins, best receiver in football through 5 weeks. Well, he's supposed to be back this week. All signs pointed to him be back this week. He did not practice today. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really know what that means. It's kind of unclear at the time we're recording this podcast what it means. But for a guy that everybody expects to play in this game, it is really curious that he did not practice. They did not start his clock to return on Wednesday. So Nico Collins is out there. It obviously changes the dynamic of that Houston offense. If he isn't, Carlton Davis and Terron Arnold and Meek Robertson, with all that man coverage, they might eat. Might get their pick.
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably explains the decline in Stroud's numbers this year. Obviously, he was sensational as a rookie. I think was it 25 touchdowns and only 4 picks, and the prolificness isn't there this year. Already 4 interceptions, only 11 touchdowns. But this is not the cast of pass catchers that he had envisioned throwing to this season. So that probably explains some of his slow start. Yeah, back to Goff for a minute. When you talk about checking the ball down to Montgomery and Gibbs, it's a little bit like accepting a single when you're Ichiro in his prime or Ricky Henderson, because that single so often became a double and sometimes became a triple when he would steal 2 bases. And it feels like that's what Jared Goff sees in Montgomery and Gibbs. Yeah, he might gain only 5 yards in the air on that throw, but in all likelihood, those guys are going to break off 5, 10, sometimes 15 plus more yards. And that becomes a double or a triple, and in the rare case, even a home run. So why not keep doing it? I mean, Jared obviously has really understood the need this year in particular to just protect the football and let all of these incredible playmakers around him move the ball down the field. And in doing so, has the Lions at 7-1. And I thought it was interesting when Ben Johnson mentioned last week, you know, the way that we're really coaching Jared to play turnover-free football has, yes, invited some more pressure in terms of him holding the ball longer. But just the fact that Johnson mentioned that, the fact that he highlighted it, to me was noteworthy, because it's clear that this really is the way the Lions want to play offense. Just don't turn the ball over. Take the shots when they're there. And between St. Brown and Jamo and Laporta and Montgomery and Gibbs, we will find our way into the end zone one way or another. The big task on Sunday night is obviously handling maybe the best defensive end duo in the NFL. I mean, Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson are legit. I don't know how many other teams in the NFL, if any, have a tandem on the edge like that. I know they're both over 5.5 sacks and counting. So, you know, this is a Taylor Decker, Panay Sewell, and obviously, you know, some Shane Zylstra, some Laporta chipping. This is their game to shine. And if they do, then I think the Lions should continue on as they have offensively for really the last month and a half.
I think the Browns used to have a pretty good tandem, but Lions broke that bad boy up. They really are a great pass rushing team. You hit the nail on the head with what the Lions offensive tackles need to step up. I know Decker would tell you as quickly as anybody, this is not the best stretch of his career. I don't think it's been as bad as some people have made it out to be, but he's given up some sacks in the last couple of weeks. And so he's going to need to tighten that up against a guy that he is very familiar with in Hunter for sure. I want to go back to the offense though, because I think it's really interesting. You know, it's something we've heard for years, and probably more true in the NFL this year than in any. But defenses are forcing these offenses to take the long road to the end zone. Right, you're having to put together these 8, 9, 10, sometimes 15 play drives if you want to get it done. And Goff appeared on that Belichick podcast a couple weeks ago, and that was what Bill Belichick said. If his strategy to defending mm-hmm. this super arsenal of the Lions would be just making them work so hard, and Patriots have done this forever, and trying to force them into a mistake. The classic bend, don't break defense, but that's the beauty of what the Lions are doing here. You know, obviously they had the atrocious 1-for-7 showing in the red zone against Tampa Bay, but since then, they've been really, really good in the red zone. They're up to top 10 in the league, 63.6% conversion rate into touchdown for the season, 80% in the last three games. And so they are built to, I mean, obviously have explosive playmakers in Gibbs and J-Mo and, St. Brown and Laporta to a lesser extent, but they are built to go the nickel and dime approach and just slowly work it down the field and capitalize when they, you know, are able to put these sustained drives together. And it's clearly why they're one of the best NFL offenses, because they can do it all. And, they don't accept the bend, don't break defensive strategy being deployed against them.
Yeah. Which makes for an interesting matchup Sunday, because in some ways this Texans defense is a break, don't bend defense. They're number two in the NFL in yards allowed, but third to last in red zone defense. So they're doing a really great job between the 20s, but they've had vulnerabilities down by the end zone. And the Lions have so many ways to attack you down there that you got to feel pretty good about their chances to score. And I feel like that this does become a bit of a track meet on Sunday night, and the Lions obviously have the pieces to keep up.
Yeah, I'm super curious if Nico Collins plays. I think it changes the dynamic of the entire matchup. I don't know. Maybe it's a bit of a hyperbole. Maybe that the Texans aren't quite there yet with the way that KC, as they said, gets their business done, and Baltimore is just playing pretty outstanding football, minus the trip up against Cleveland a couple weeks ago. But this felt like a potential fun, intriguing Super Bowl preview in a lot of ways, looking at it, to start the season. And like I said, the Texans don't feel like they're quite there yet, but 6-3, they're not that far away.
Yeah. I was just kind of going through my head about everything the Lions have done so well this year on offense. I think it's worth bringing up how David Montgomery is beginning to change the way that I think a lot of people view him. Obviously, when he got here and really entering this season, he was considered this downhill, physical, run-through-you back. Can we appreciate how efficiently and how impressively he can run around you? This guy, his jump cut might be one of the best in the NFL. He was killing the Packers last week, especially on that first drive and making a lot of dudes miss. And Jared Goff kind of hit on it today, and it's been stressing it now for a couple of weeks that, you know, obviously Montgomery and Gibbs are categorized in different ways, but they really do it all at the running back position. And I think Montgomery more and more is growing his national profile. And, you know, he's always said, yeah, I know that people overlook me. I know that people doubt me. It's been that way my entire career. I think as the Lions play in more of these spotlight games and as Montgomery continues to meet the moment, people are appreciating just how complete of a running back he is. And it's well-deserved for a guy who really has been, if you look at the numbers, like one of the 10 most productive running backs since he entered the NFL. And now he's beginning to get his due. I was really impressed watching some of his runs back last week at how he was able just to make up for the rare cases in which the Lions would miss a block and he would get a guy one-on-one, whether it was at the line or in the second level, and make him miss. He's got as much wiggle as just about anyone in the NFL, in addition to obviously his ability to plow through defenders.
Yeah, I think we all understand why Jahmyr Gibbs is the more interesting, exciting back. I mean, the explosiveness is so rare. He's the Alvin Kamara to the Mark Ingram, but people forget how good Mark Ingram was. And I think David Montgomery is better than Mark Ingram, if we're going to use those comparisons. And, you know, it was the reason why when they switched from Jamal Williams, I was among the many that advocated bringing Jamal Williams back because of what he meant to the team, how he executed within the scheme. But when they signed Montgomery, I don't remember exact order, but it was within hours, maybe a couple days, when that switch became apparent, like, it was so obviously an upgrade immediately. And the first thing I remember standing out was the missed tackle numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, just as you get to see it now, and he had more last year than he had his final year in Chicago, and he's on pace for just about or more than last year this year, according to, you know, PFF, and we're talking 50 missed tackles per season, so three a game. And honestly, it feels like more. It does. Yeah. And where he's so far advanced beyond Gibbs is his vision and his feel in space. And there was all that talk a couple weeks ago about Gibbs making the safety miss, and that's what you do as a explosive playmaker. You're in that second level in such a hurry that's the guy you're worried about. Montgomery's ability to dance in traffic is so impressive. And you're right. He's able to juke right around defensive tackles and linebackers where there's just bodies everywhere. And it's like Neo in the Matrix. So it just, that's what it feels like. Like there's this unbelievable feel for space when it's crowded. That make him so impressive. And look at the complementary nature of that backfield is really what makes this Lions offense special. And for all the talk of why are St. Brown's numbers down, or why is Laporta's numbers down? One is J-Mo. J-Mo's eating more of that pie than Josh Reynolds. But Jared Goff's attempted something like 70 less passes, throwing the ball like 30% less this season. It's because that backfield is so damn good that they just don't have to throw it as much. It's all part of the efficiency of the whole operation. And so, does Laporta's number suffer? They do. And the question is, who cares?
Yeah.
Outside of, you know, Stoney's neighbor who's drafted Laporta in the second round, right? Like, I don't know. What are they averaging now? 32 points a game, something like that? It's just
pretty good, right?
It's pretty wild.
Yeah, and there's a reason that the Lions open and close almost every game with David Montgomery. He embodies the way they want to play, really on both sides of the ball, but obviously on offense. And when they want to send a message that you're in for a long day, they do it with Demo. And when they want to close you out and step on your throat, they do it with Demo. And there's really no doubt when they hand him the ball that he's going to find yards that either are there or aren't there. I mean, when they took over up 10 last Sunday in Green Bay and just kept feeding Montgomery the ball, there was no doubt that eventually he was just going to drain the clock. They were going to get on the flight and come home 7-1. And by the way, did you see Jared Goff's response to why they were they were all kind of pointing and laughing at the Packers defensive line at the end of that game. I don't know if you saw this, but on TV,
I did not.
The cameras panned to the Lions huddle during like victory formation, and they're kneeling out the clock, and they caught Goff and a few of the offensive linemen just kind of pointing and chuckling at the Packers defense. And he was asked about it yesterday on Carson Anderson. And he was like, yeah, they just kept on saying like, we'll see you again. We'll see you again. And Jared, in his typical deadpan style, was like, yeah, we know, we're in the division. We play you twice a year, every year. Just making these dudes out to be like total meatheads. Like, yeah, we know, we'll see you again. That's how the NFL schedule works.
I was waiting for you to tell me that Jared Goff said something bulletin board material worthy, yeah. Which would have been
it was the exact
one of the biggest upsets.
It
drove opposite.
The point home nonetheless.
By the way, that game, the next game between the Packers and Lions, just given how often the Packers shot themselves in the foot, it's going to be outstanding. It's awesome to see like a very legitimate rivalry brewing. Heard them talking about that on Green Bay radio on my way into the stadium. Like it just does feel like there's a buildup, but it's going to last a while with just the relative youth of both of those rosters, the pieces they have in place. I just think we're in for a lot of entertaining football the next 3, 4, 5 seasons between those two teams.
Yep. And as we are this Sunday, I mean, this game in Houston was chosen by NBC as their spotlight game for a reason. I mean, these are two of the sexiest teams in the NFL right now. Everyone wants to watch these two teams and these two offenses go to work. And I've been looking forward to this one really since the schedule dropped. I'm sure it's the same for you. And when the Lions go on the road now, they just do so with such a workman-like approach. And I don't have any doubt that they'll come home from this one with another win in the bag. It doesn't mean that it'll be easy or that it'll be smooth sailing the whole way, but it's hard not to have just like deep confidence in this team every time they take the field. I love the fact that Dan Campbell yesterday was lamenting the fact that they didn't take control of the Packers game sooner than they did. I remind you, they were up 24-3 on the road against a 6-2 team early in the third quarter, and Campbell is still lamenting stalled drives in the second half and defensive penalties that kind of kept the Packers like pseudo in that game. That just speaks to like this obsessive coaching staff. No matter how well the Lions are playing, whether it's Campbell, Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, or others, they're looking at their flaws. They're looking at what they aren't doing as well as they could. And it's a large part of the reason why you believe in this team continuing to raise its own bar as they have every week.
A couple non-related points for me to close this one out. I am struck by the similarities between these franchises. I think both of them hit it right with their head coaches. I think they're both building through the draft, and kind of asked Campbell about it today, and he said something I thought was really interesting. He said that they're often in their draft room and Houston takes a guy they really like, and they're like, oh, that's a good pick.
That's good.
And it makes me think of when you're in a fantasy league, right? And like the guy in front of you just keeps taking your damn players.
Yeah.
And you know, just, but that shows the level of respect for what their Houston is doing. I do think there's, quite a mirror element to this. And I just think Houston, even though they turned it around much quicker under their coaching staff, maybe because their GM had a couple years head start. They're probably still a year behind the Lions, and certainly the injuries that they have, the Diggs one, most importantly, is kind of kept them that way. I did want to point out, because you brought it up, I thought it was really interesting, and I don't know if the weather had anything to do with it, but often after a big win, particularly on the road, the locker room is a very rambunctious, celebratory place. You could hear the music blaring through the walls into the press conference. There's, you see some of the post game videos where there's hooping and hollering and shouting. It was very quiet after the Green Bay game. And it just was like everybody was just getting dressed, ready to get on the bus and go home. Like they just came, put their work in, punched out. And it struck me as odd that a win in Green Bay is no longer this huge emotional high for a franchise. They just, again, yeah. maybe the rain just made them want to get out of there quicker, but it felt like it was more than that. Like they just wanted to, they didn't need to celebrate something they expected to do. And that's just the era that we're in of Lions football. 3.5 points, Will. Lions are once again giving points on the road to a playoff caliber team. I don't know when this stops getting weird. I think we both picked the Packers with the points last week. What are you doing this week?
Yeah, well, I'm going to learn from my mistake, and I'm going to pick the Lions to cover this one. And I'll reiterate what I just said. It's hard to find flaws in this team, and if there was one, it feels like they just addressed it in a pretty big way. We'll see if Za'Darius Smith plays on Sunday or not. It sounds like they're going to have him practice on Friday. This was supposed to be his bye week, then he gets traded to a team that's in the middle of just a regular week of game prep. So Lions are giving him off today and Thursday. He'll come back on Friday. I digress. I just think that the Lions can defend really well what the Texans do best. And by that, I mean Sewell and Decker versus Anderson and Hunter is the matchup that you can feel good about. You don't have to feel great about it, but I think the Texans probably have leveraged that matchup to their advantage most weeks of this season. It feels like that's more or less a wash on Sunday night. And if that's how it plays out, and Goff has time to do what he's been doing, I just think that the Texans will have a hard time keeping up given some of their losses on offense. Yeah, I'll take the Lions.
I think the decision to give Smith Wednesday and Thursday off is interesting for multiple reasons. One, it's a confirmation to how this organization treats people.
Yeah.
It's people over players first. That's part of the culture. It's why people play so hard for Dan Campbell. And there's also something to be said about them not feeling desperate to get him in here, because they played without Aiden Hutchinson for 3 weeks. They played out Josh Pascal for two of those, and they beat some really good teams. And so they are just confident in who they are without that. They know they needed that to solidify the long-term case for success. But I think Za'Darius will be out there on Sunday. I'm just going off my gut. And I think they'll probably find a way to get him out there for 15, 20 snaps, get his feet wet, find some pass rush situations. The old James Houston role, if you will,
mm-hmm.
Will be filled by a player that better fits this team than Za'Darius Smith. But I am in agreement with you. I feel like I'm done picking against the Lions this year. The segment's going to get dumb. It's like, how much are we going to take the Lions by? And it is what it is. Like this team is really good. They're taking care of their business. And, I expect them to cover once again. I think the Houston Texans are in for their first home loss. It'll probably be by one score, but it'll be by more than 4 points.
We need to amend this segment moving forward and just make it, how many points would the Lions have to be giving for us to pick the opponent? And when you asked me that before the Titans game, I said 16.5, and they won by double that. They won by 38. So from now on, we're just going to do, how many points does the opponent need for us to take the opponent? And by the way, you mentioned Za'Darius Smith likely playing. I kept finding myself today humming in my own head, this is the dawning of the age of Za'Darius. The age of Za'Darius, and now it's stuck in your head too, and all of the listeners
out there. What's going on at 97.1?
Loves company.
Well, thanks for that. I need to work, but all right. Well, this episode, as always, produced by Zach Clark. Podcast is available for free on the Odyssey app or wherever else you get your podcast: Apple, Spotify. Download. Like, listen, review, all that stuff. We appreciate it all. For Will Birchfield, I'm Justin Rogers. Oh, yeah, go read our stuff, too. We do other jobs.
Oh, yeah, right? we do tap our keyboards now and then.
Yeah, Will's over at 971theticket.com. I'm over at DetroitFootball.net. For Will, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.